Welcome to Business Game Changers, where you'll hear expert tips on the big issues and the hottest trends to level up your business game. If you're building a career or building a business, this is must-hear radio. Here's your host, Sarah Westall.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. There is a huge gulf between millennials and the older generation. Millennials have grown up with social networking and instant communication their entire lives. This has created a different paradigm, a different way that they think, and their expectations are very different from that of the older generations. That's why it's really difficult for the older generations to manage and to work with the younger generation. And today we're going to invite Indigo Dutton to talk with us about how to deal with this difference in thought and how to get a lot out of millennials, even though you really struggle with figuring them out. She has a master's degree in psychology, and she also has an extensive business experience. She's done a lot of consulting and has ran multiple companies. And the combination of her psychology and business experience really gives us a different insight on how to deal with this group of people. And then she's also going to give us tips on how to create passive income. Wouldn't you love to have passive income as you go into retirement and have money coming in and not have to work so hard? Well, she's going to give us tips on how to do that. So let's welcome Indigo Dutton to the program. Hi, Indigo. Welcome to the program.
Nice to be here.
Well, good. I wanted to bring you on to talk about the few companies that you have. You have two different companies, and you also have unique products and perspective on the industry and the people that you consult with. But before we get into that, I'd like you to talk a little bit about your background before you started your companies.
Okay. Well, my BA is in international commerce, and then my master's is in counseling psychology, which you might think are two very, very different things. And they actually do come from very different perspectives. One is an international perspective. It's very meta, and it's about how people exchange across national boundaries. And the other is extremely internal. It's extremely personal. It's about what's going on within each person, where are their motivations coming from, where are their blocks coming from. But interestingly enough, those two things fit together really well. And so over about 15 years before I launched Aspiratech, which was my, you know, first major company, I just kind of wove back and forth between those two things. Sometimes I was working as a behavioral health specialist for the state of Hawaii. Other times I was working running other people's businesses, running conference planning businesses and technology businesses and MIS departments at investment banking firms and things like that. So I kind of went back and forth between the kind of business technology and the more counseling work. And at a certain point, I wound up launching Aspiratech, which was my first company where I was able to work as a consultant in my own company doing the things I had done for other people's companies.
And there really is a big connection between psychology, where I mean it's working with people and understanding how people behave and why they do the things they do, because business isn't logical a lot of times. We'd all like it to be. We'd all like it to be very obvious, but it's just not, because you have people with emotions and all these weird things that go on.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely, the skills come in handy.
Yeah, I can imagine. And even on Wall Street and the finance stuff that you've done, it's just so much is just bizarre. You just can't. That's where I have a hard time sometimes, because some of the things that people do are just so bizarre on the, you know, on the stock market and things. And it's just because people behave emotionally and things. And I think that's what I've seen. And I think your different backgrounds make you unique, but very skilled in dealing with those things. So what does...
Well, actually...
Go ahead.
Yeah, actually, you know, one last point on that. One of the things that's come in most handy is in managing work teams, and also sometimes in managing client relationships, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, there's a personality called a high conflict personality. And people with high conflict personalities are throughout the world of work. It's not something that stops you from being able to be successful. You probably, if, you know, if someone has a high conflict personality, they may not wind up being as successful as they otherwise would. But sometimes people can move up very, very high in the ranks with a personality like that, but it's really hard for the people around them to do well. And so one of the things, you know, I just came out with a new management training course, and one of the things that I'm able to teach in that course, in addition to, you know, kind of hard skills like setting metrics and analysis and making sure you're on target to strategy and that your department is contributing to the company's overall strategy and things like that, I can also say, look, what do you do if you've got a high conflict personality on your team? How do you make the team succeed? So I do feel that it's definitely been a benefit.
Sure.
Having both of those.
And how about like the alpha personalities, which so often move into leadership positions, and they have this extreme need to be in charge, and they sometimes can topple over people, and they can be either very beneficial or very destructive as well.
Yeah, and so, you know, psychology is a great subject for anyone to learn, honestly. I mean, because the reality is we are dealing with people not just from different psychological makeups, but from different cultures. Now, you know, we're in an international workforce. And so being able to, even without knowing someone's cultural assumptions, even without being able to see those, you can see the patterns in their behavior and see how, where they're coming from, given what you know of people in your own culture, right? But if you don't recognize those patterns, now you're really dependent on knowing the actual social norms, which you don't know for every country on the planet.
That makes sense. So you kind of go at a meta level of looking at patterns. And I think if you if you don't know the patterns, you take things the wrong way and take things personally, and then you react improperly versus just going with the flow and realizing, okay, this is what they're, this isn't personal. This is just how their culture is.
Yeah. Different assumptions, that, you know, different expectations.
So what does your company can you pronounce that for me?
Aspiratech.
Aspiratech.
Yes, Aspiratech.
Jeez. What does Aspiratech do?
So that's a corporate business technology firm. So we focus on, actually, probably it's easier if I describe the process. So we would go into a company, we would learn their business process first, like how do you run the business right now? What are the rules? What are the procedures? And then we would take that and say, okay, what are your goals? How, if life was ideal, what would things be like? And then we do sort of a gap analysis, and then we look at how we could use technology to get them from where they are to where they want to be, and how we can, in fact, use technology to enhance their business process, make it more efficient, make it more intuitive, because if you make something intuitive, then when you get to training people and how to use it, it's really easy for them to remember because it just makes sense.
It kind of flows.
And then usually
it flows.
You have to train them.
It flows with their natural process, and it's simple.
Exactly.
You get rid of all the
crap. If they forget
crap.
Something. Right. If they forget something, they can kind of fill it in. Like, they don't have to memorize every little detail because they memorize most of it, and then what they forget, it's just obvious when they look at the screen what they would do next. And so they learn very quickly. Of course, we do provide training as well.
Sure.
Because now they're going to do their jobs a little bit differently. So we train the staff, and we also train at least one more technical person who can make changes to the system. Because we know that no matter how well we did our job, as people start using it, it's going to be like, oh, wow, if it can do this, could it do this? You know, it would be really great if
they
start getting input.
Yeah, I think that's a nightmare.
Wonderful,
but you
too,
think it's,
right?
Yeah, it's always a double-edged sword. You got to manage process.
I always set them up, though, with a system for taking in that feedback because you want that. Like, at first, you've really got mostly the higher level people. You know, you might have like one user on the team and, you know, kind of one more negative person on the team when you're planning everything, so you get those perspectives a little bit. But when you really get your great feedback is when you've got a system that's mostly working the new way, people are getting it, and now everyone has an idea, and then you just basically vote up the best ideas. You don't give people the expectation that just because they submitted an idea, it's going to happen. But you give them, you want their input. I mean, their input is more valuable.
Well, you can get, when you get input from people in general, they can come up with ideas that you hadn't thought about that's so clever. That's where you get the cool
stuff. Because they're in the trenches, right? They're the ones who are using it every day. And they're getting information that's not necessarily all working its way up the chain of command. And you don't want it all working its way up the chain of command, but you want to create a system where the best stuff can emerge and be acted upon quickly. And so that's another thing, to set people up for a system with that, and to make sure that there's someone in that company, that there's at least one person in that company who knows how to act on that information and change the technology we've given them, so that we don't have to come back every time they want a new field added, or every time they want something to be somewhere else on the page or something, you know.
Yeah, that's the awful stuff, is you have to have a good process for dealing with that. Now, do you do a change management? Because I know when you put in new things, people really, there's a lot of anxiety around that process.
Right, exactly. Now, you know, the interesting thing is we do have a whole change management program, and when we've worked with larger companies, they generally will invest in that. But a lot of times the smaller companies, though, they don't really have the budget for a full change management program. And so they're, you know, for better or for worse, their thing is just train them on how to do it, and we'll worry about, we'll tell them to like it. We'll tell them to get over their apprehension about it, because this is how it's going to be.
But you know what?
And so then we really,
with a smaller group, it's easier to get past that, anyways.
But by smaller company, I don't mean like number of people. I mean, sometimes we've got like, you know, 50 people that are being trained, which is, you know, it's a small company, right? But I think change management would be really beneficial, to tell you the truth. But generally, the budget for the project and the timeline in which they just don't want, you know what I mean. Like, a lot of companies don't have that attitude that it's their responsibility to make it easier for their employees to do their job.
So
it's
the
like
next
you're
time
getting a paycheck, that makes it easy.
So the next time they see you, after you do one project, next time they see you, they want to stone you out of the get out of here.
So fortunately, just like you noticed, we're laughing a lot today, and that's a key part of how I do training. It's like, I want to make it fun. I want them to have really fond memories of the experience, so that even if I didn't have a chance to do process exercises with them, that they still just come away, when they think back on when they were first introduced to this material, they have a good feeling associated with it.
Well, I want to get into your next business, because this is really, from what I understand, where your passion lies and what you've really been focusing on more lately. Can you talk about your second adventure here that I think is your main focus?
Yeah, so my labor of love. So AspireTech has been really good to me, and, you know, I've been able to help a lot of companies, and have a team of people who've helped me to do that work. You know, I'm not that purely technical, so obviously the real crunching technical stuff has been done by my team, and that's been wonderful. And yet, some of the trends that are going on, I think, in our economy and our world of work in general have also been affecting me. And I've felt this longing to be working with smaller companies, even like solo entrepreneurs, you know, sole proprietors, or certainly micro businesses, no more than 10 employees, or they may be just one person and 10 contractors, even. And when I work with them, I get to bring in more of my psychology background, and I'm really developing the business and developing the person at the same time, and that's just so much more fulfilling to me.
And then
that's Awaken.
Yeah, the name of your company is Awaken, right?
Yeah, Awaken LLC, yeah.
Okay, so why did you call it Awaken then? I know you kind of explained it in your, just right now, but go into that more.
Yeah, well, that whole idea of the separation between who I am in work and who I am in the world, like, those barriers are coming down. The younger generation is definitely leading the way with that. And, you know, I'm a lot of us who are older, we're getting swept up in that tide too. And we also are saying, you know what, I don't want this separation there anymore. I'm not willing to be one person in this context and then have to be someone else in another context. In fact, I want my whole life, everything I do, to feed into a sense of meaning for me. And that's what Awaken is about. It's like, you know, if you think of it this way, it's like, wouldn't you love to live in a world in which everyone was living as who they truly feel like they are? Like, everyone was just expressing themselves. They felt relaxed. They were happy. It's kind of like how you imagine Hawaii.
Yes.
You know, everyone's constantly in aloha, but stuff is still getting done. Someone's still baking the bread. Someone's still, you know, driving the taxi, you know. But wouldn't you like the bread to be baked by someone who feels like it's their passion to bake bread? Isn't that the bread you want to eat? And if you were going to bake bread, isn't that the way you'd want to be baking it?
Yeah, it's finding your passion. When I taught at the university, I talked to the kids a lot about passion, because you will be so much better at anything you do when you find your passion. It doesn't feel like work. It's just, you just love it. It's not work. You know, of course there's going to be parts that you do that you don't really like. It just is what it is. I mean, I don't get over, you know.
Well, that's what you hire people for.
Yeah, well, if you're, yeah. But there's still parts of everything you have to do that you don't like. But in general, you're doing your passion. And the stuff you don't like, you know you got to do it in order to be able to do your passion. And
right.
So,
It fits into the bigger thing of what you're doing that you love doing. And so it's like, you know, as long as you can fit things into a context, you can put up with pretty much anything for at least, you know, 24 hours.
Well, exactly. It's not so bad. So what does Awaken do with your clients? So what do you do? Like, if you get a client, what do you do with them?
Well, first they have to make sure that there's really a fit between what they need and where my specialization is, like where my special gifts are, if you will. And a lot of the time they don't know. They don't really know what they need because they don't know what they don't know, right? They've gotten to the point where they see that what they've been trying to do on their own isn't working. They're dancing as fast as they can, but it's like they're not getting anywhere and they're getting overwhelmed and exhausted. And they finally are ready to say, okay, somebody help me, you know? And that's pretty much that's all they know, is that they're ready for help. So first I kind of like to do an assessment with them, and I find out a lot about their company just in writing. I have them submit information to me in writing. And then after I read through that, I generally have some sense of what this person probably needs next, and is that something I want to provide? If it is, then I do like a 90-minute call with them, and we talk it through even at a deeper level, and I find out more about them as a person and what their goals are and what kind of life they're trying to create for themselves and why they want to be in business for themselves at all. From there, if it all looks good at that point, then what I've been doing primarily is a 4-month program, which is a 3-month accelerator program where I'm actually custom creating a curriculum for them to get them from where they are right now to the objectives that we set in that preliminary work, and then a follow-up 1 month later for just sort of mentoring and just checking in to see how they've been doing at implementing everything we put together in the 3 months. So what the objective is, like what happens in those three main months, changes with every single client.
Based on who they are and what they want to do.
Yeah, exactly.
So you have a product that I think is absolutely, I just think it's very interesting. And you have a passive income product. And what is that? First, what is that? And then I want you to get into why you created it.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll take on the two together. It's like where it kind of came from. It's very new. And so one of the things, as you can understand from the process that I just described of how I work with individual clients, is that often during the process, it starts being like, oh, there are some patterns here. I'm finding that frequently this is something that people need. And then sometimes even earlier in the process, before I even will accept someone into the longer program, when we're just in kind of the discovery phase, I'll be like, this person doesn't really need this full program. They really have a very specific objective here. They really just want to get some money coming in, that they're investing hours now and getting paid back for those hours later, because their real passion is related to service. Their real passion is about traveling. Their real passion is they want to be with their kids and actually spending time. I mean, these are their actual passions, and the money for them truly is just a means to an end. If that's the case, my longer program isn't really the right program for them. And so as that started emerging, I said, okay, let me just create something that's more concise, a lot quicker, and more targeted, where it doesn't change with each person and it just gets straight to this one point, and it's the same point every single time. And that is the passive income intensive. So is kind of like a one day where we go through the whole process. We work together throughout the day. And by the end of the day, I expect them to have like a really solid blueprint of implementation for this passive income product. And 2 weeks later, I meet with them again. And each day they have an assignment for the 2 weeks. And when I meet with them again 2 weeks later, I expect them to have the product completed. And when I meet with them again a month later, I expect them to have their first revenue in the bank.
And it's basically, let's get it done. You help them come up with, and I love this concept because passive income is something, it's so practical. It's something that almost everyone wants. And a lot of people out there, they don't want work to be the center of their lives. They want, like you were saying, their children might be, they might have hobbies that they enjoy that just is really hard to make money at, although a lot of hobbies you can turn into a money-making event. But in general, there's a lot of people that really would benefit from this. And actually, when you retire, you would want something that you could do and have some passive
income.
That's what
I thought!
Right?
I call passive income the new retirement fund. I do. I call it the new retirement fund.
Well, and that's fantastic. Okay, so who would be interested in this product, and what kind of things can people do?
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of the interest, you know, a lot of it is just that you've gotten to this point in your life where you're no longer driven by the passion for, you know, this big impact you want to have. Like, if you're in that phase where you're meaning, you're trying to leave your mark, the other program would be better for you because it's more about that, like how you get the life you were born to live, how do you get those gifts out into the world. If really you're either not interested in that or just past that, you've done that, you're fulfilled with that, then passive income is great for you because it's like, look, you got to be supported, you know, you got to keep the bills paid, you probably want to live comfortably. I mean, I live very comfortably, and I am at this point, you know, despite the fact that I have other revenue sources,
well,
it is my passive income
that
covers all my living.
You want to eat well. You want to be able to
heat
your house.
Well. You want to live in a beautiful place and drive a nice car and have security and know that you can do what you want when you want, and that the question you ask is, what do I want, not what can I have? That's what you want. And I'm not talking about having a house on every continent. I'm just saying you live the life that you want to live without having to ask, can I?
Well, and having, I mean, even the basic necessities, being able to eat the food you want, being able to go get the medical care you need when you need it, those kinds of things.
Oh, definitely that.
Yes.
Yeah, most definitely that. But I would say just that peace of mind, that you don't have to worry about money and that you don't have to relate to life with this question in your mind of, can I have it? You know, I really want to purge that question from all of my clients' mentality.
Yes, you can have it if
that's really a simple.
So you really focus people. You really get it. You help them get it done, which I like. It's very practical. It's very practical.
Oh, it's definitely very practical.
Well, I love it because a lot of people are so esoteric and they talk to people about things and they never really get things done. And so at the end of the day, they might cost a lot of money to bring on as a consultant, but you don't really feel like you got anything out of it. But with what you're doing... Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Well, I think that's the difference between also coaching and consulting, too. Coaching, and these words, you know, people will use one or the other and then really wind up doing a mixture of the two. There isn't really quite a word for what I do because I'm somewhere between coach, consultant, you know.
Well, I haven't seen many people that do quite what you do, which is pretty interesting. But go ahead.
Yeah, I think a lot of times when people are just purely doing coaching, it's really about asking the right questions to help you find your own answers. And so it's closer along the spectrum towards psychotherapy and counseling than it is towards, you know, say implementing, right? Whereas consulting is a little bit closer towards just being an implementation / trainer person where here's the technical knowledge. I have it. You need it. Here you go. It's closer into that direction. Where I fall with consultant, especially given, you know, my background, there is certainly a coaching element because I do encounter, especially in my longer program, people who have psychological blocks that are stopping them from being successful. And until we work with those blocks and get past them, we can have the best plans, but they never execute. They never follow through. As soon as they get out of contact with me, they go off and they do their old thing again.
And
so getting them past that.
Is a lot of it fear?
Go ahead.
Is a lot of it fear?
It's it's a lot of it is conditioning, actually, because even fear is just a conditioned response. So they can have different kinds of conditioned limitations, but basically it's that they've got an inner belief system that's not really serving them. And once we kind of blast through that, boom, I mean, they just take off. Like,
sure.
It's like this one thing, the dam gives birth, and everything that they've been building up over the years just comes flowing through, and it's fantastic. I mean, I wish I had time to tell you some of the stories of these, I can't think of a better word than miraculous things that have happened, just like so suddenly once they break through, there was this one, I have to give you just one. There's this one woman that we were doing this work, and she had a studio, and finally, I just said to her, you know, I think you don't actually want to be in this business. I think you've got exactly the number of clients you want, which is zero. Because you really, we need to shut this business down. And she just sighed and she said, you know, you're right. I really don't want to do it. And so what we did, wound up doing was we shifted and we clarified what kind of work she really wanted to do, which was really to be an internal entrepreneur. She wanted to be an entrepreneur, but within a company. The next time I met with her, she's like, you won't believe what happened. Within a few days of having that conversation with you, someone called me out of the blue to invite me to come interview for this job across the street from where I was already working, where I'll basically be leading this internal team for this major corporation, basically an entrepreneurial team, like coming up with new ideas and testing them and helping the company move forward.
But she doesn't have to
do this. It's like the perfect...
It's perfect for her. She doesn't have to do the sales and marketing part. Reading that she might not like that part of it, but she likes the whole new creative part.
Right. She started a business because she liked the idea of having her own business, but she didn't have enough understanding. And once she got in, she felt like she couldn't pull out. And so, you know, another coach or consultant might have just kept on with her with the track she was already on because, hey, I'm a business consultant. I help entrepreneurs. I don't know how to help you as an employee. The thought would never even come up to position someone as an employee. It would be just like, how do we make this work? So I love both the very concrete, I want to see results aspect of it that comes from my technical consulting background, but I also love getting to use my psychotherapy background and help people clarify where is it they're really trying to get to? What does a happy life look like? Because a happy life is the only true success.
You know, and I've worked with a couple executive coaches over the years and things, and what I like about this and is that you, it's pretty affordable, but it's also to the point of getting things accomplished. And I know other executive coaches do that too, but it's like, it's the consulting part, I think, is what you have. It's the combination. And so a business professional would come into this needing, like they, if they want to come up with passive income and they want to do some other things, you would find it affordable and rewarding because you would actually come out with something done. Not just, okay, I got you to a different mental state. Like you were saying, you get to a different mental state and you leave and now you're kind of on your own again and you just whatever. But you actually work with them, get them into a different mental state and actually get concrete things going so that they're on their way. By the time they're done with you, they're making income.
Right.
And it's not esoteric. I mean, it can be, but in general, you figure out how to bring it down to that level.
And that thing of having revenue come in from something they're doing that's so in alignment with, you know, what they're trying to create, whether that is, again, a full, like, life's mission or just to set themselves up for freedom, whichever that is. That is another internal hurdle. Like a lot of people just don't believe they can have that. So if you can be there with them to get them past that, now they know they can have that. Now it's like they can just run with it. It's like, okay, this is your first passive income product, but it won't be your last, right? Because
sure.
We need a business. We don't just, a business, a product is not a business. Whether it's a single service or a single product, you know, that product's going to have a life cycle. So you need a full business around it, not just a single product.
And so you're trying to get people to think differently, too, about their planning their life. Instead of just investing in the stock market, having in a 401k and an IRA, and then you go retire, it's like, okay, well, you can do that, and that's a good supplement. But let's look at some other things and ways to
bring in, and this isn't just for retirement. This could, you could be an executive who's in your 40s and, or even in your 30s, and you're just coming up with different ways to create passive income to the point where eventually maybe you can quit your job and now this is your whole world. Or you're an entrepreneur.
Choice, right?
What'd you say?
Yeah, it's just that, yeah, exactly. It's just creating freedom. It's really sure. Making sure that at any given day, you're going through that day saying, what do I most want to do today? And that, for the most part, that's what you're doing. I mean, as you said before, there are certain things that you just need doing, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah.
But, you know, for the vast majority of our time, we really could be really just answering the question, what do I most want to do right now? Our lives could be nothing but answering that question once we get our physical needs taken care of. You know, that's kind of the game we're in. We've got these great bodies, and they need shelter and food.
Well, exactly.
So to stay in the game, we've got to take care of that part of it. But then, you know, then there's, once that's taken care of, it's like, wow, what do I want to do now? You know, I want to go for a hike. I want to be in the outdoors. I want to play with my dog. I want to play with my kids. I want to go to the school play. I want to go to Bali. I want to go to Fiji.
Sure.
I want to start a nonprofit. I want to volunteer in a nonprofit.
So what kind of passive income products have you created?
So I have quite a few different things going on. And I didn't do them all at once, obviously. You know, it's been a bit of a path. But the first one was an app. So it's a business technology app that was created by my company, Aspiratech. And it took about 4 months to create that app. And it's been, you know, continues to pay me. I think its half-life is about up because they've made some changes in the technology where it's gotten to the point where if people simply know how to use the technology better, they won't need our app anymore.
Sure.
But
yeah.
So far it's been still, so I can see the writing on the wall, which is, as I said before, you can't have just the product. You have to have a business because every product has a life cycle. But anyway, so that was the first one. Then I have a couple of books. My first book is more of a self-help book. It's like self-actualization book. And the second book is from my training as a behavioral therapist. So it's like, how do you work with habit? How do you get your habits to serve your goals instead of undermining you? And then I also have a few online training courses, quite a few. Actually, I have some that are more technology oriented, like how do you use this technology, and it's some of the things that I was teaching to my clients at Aspiratech. I already mentioned the new manager training course, which is really, you know, any new manager, if you're listening to this and you have people you've just promoted into management or you're thinking about promoting into management, it's really super inexpensive course. It's like, you know, not even $100, and it will give them the foundation of them understanding exactly what are the expectations of that job and what are the skills that they need to use and how do they use them. And then I think there's one other thing that I'm forgetting.
So you have a collection.
Real estate. The other is real estate.
Oh, you have other real estate. And so you just keep collecting different passive income as you go, and your goal is to teach others how to do this as well.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, my goal really is to teach people how to have happy lives. That's really my goal, right? And I know how essential this thing of keeping the body alive
exactly
is within that, right? So let's just get practical here and take care of that thing and then have fun.
Well, one of the things that you talk about a lot, too, is the different stages of business, and you help people work through those stages. What would you say the stages of business are with the companies that you work with?
Okay, and so, you know, there's not one right system here, right? So we're totally talking in metaphors, whatever we say. But one system that I can apply consistently to have a framework is, I think of it like early stage, stage one. Doesn't matter how long you've been in business, but if you're still really kind of trying to get to a point where you consistently have not only your living expenses covered, but really are able to have some kind of investment money you're able to set aside. So that's the financial aspect of it. If you don't really have business systems in place yet, if you don't have a business that even if it shouldn't be sold, it's like if you sold it, you would sell it at a loss, but there's actually a system there where someone could even evaluate maybe buying your company. If that's not the case, you're stage one. You're really a person, not a business.
Sure. Okay.
Stage two is you've become a business. You know, you may have varying levels of success, but you know, you're supporting yourself. You know that this is something that can be here if you just keep working at it. There are systems in place that it's not all just in your head. You know, if you had to go on vacation, someone could come in and they could follow the procedures that have been laid out, or someone could evaluate the company for purchasing. You probably still couldn't get nearly enough money for it to be worth everything you've invested of your time and effort up to that point. But it is a company, right? And so people can stay in stage two for a really long time, and some people don't aspire to ever go beyond stage two because they're already at a place where they can take vacations. They're already at a point where, you know, they know they can just keep building their business. Stage three would be, okay, now you've got a business that is, like, if you decided to sell it, you could actually make a profit on it. Again, you may still decide not to sell it, but it's got high enough revenue streams that there's extra profit there. You could, if you wanted investors, there would be money to be made by investors. Like, there's enough extra for investors to actually get a return on their investment.
And so it's a healthy profit making business where you also leverage the use of others and have systems in place.
Yes, most definitely. And actually, in stage two, that should all be there too. It's just that by stage three, it's at just a level of strength where there's lots of extra,
it's attractive to investors. It's attractive to people who might want to buy it.
Yes, exactly. And again, some people never really. That's all that they want. Now we could add levels on beyond that as we get into the sophistication of, you know, what's the difference. I'm actually hesitant to give out names of companies as examples,
sure,
to not offend anyone. But let's say, you know, a public corporation that's just kind of, you know, piddling along versus, you know, a GE. I mean, obviously there's a huge more stages that you could productively look at in there, but I'm so not focused at that level that I couldn't even begin to talk about the differentiation there.
And a lot of people now are creating companies to get to stage three to sell them. It's becoming a way of life for people. Is they might be a serial entrepreneur, they get it to that stage and then they sell it because that's where their sweet spot is. That's what they like to do.
Yeah, exactly. And for me, to be perfectly honest, I think I'm a forever stage two person. Like that's the sweet, that's where I, you know, that's what I enjoy.
But what do you do with people then to help them get through the stages? I mean, what do you do?
So with Aspiratech, obviously I was working with companies that were solidly stage two or three. Some of my really, you know, big clients, you know, I've done stuff for Cisco Systems and Comcast and, you know, companies like that. So obviously those are like, you know, really much farther along. But with Awaken, where I'm working with micro businesses, generally it's all about getting people from stage one to stage two, you know, giving them an actual business, because a lot of times when they come to me, they may be calling themselves a business, but really they're more of a freelancer or what I call an employee without a company.
Yes, exactly.
You know, and they don't even understand what a company is.
They don't know what they don't know.
So they don't realize why they're constantly on this treadmill, and there never seems to be any kind of support. Like they're only as good as what they did yesterday, right?
Now, are some
and it's because you're right. They are all on their own because they don't have a company.
Well, do some of those people not? Are they because they've never worked at a large company? Or is it, you know, a company that has all those systems and structures in place? Or
no, it's that they have always worked in those companies, right?
And
they never really valued what everybody else was doing for them. They just didn't see it. They saw their own job and how good they were at their own job, and how everyone would say, oh my God, you're so good at this, you should do it for yourself. And one day either they got downsized or they just decided, I am going to do it for myself and I'm going to keep all the money. And they just never valued what all those, they thought all those other departments were only needed because it was this big company, and they didn't realize, no, those companies departments are needed because it's a company. And when you have a company, you'll need those departments too. But guess what? Guess who's the employee in all those departments now?
Well, and
you.
Yeah, and and you weren't the center of the universe before, even though you thought you were.
Right.
Right? I mean, I know that's
so now there's still got to be a marketing department.
Yes,
there's still got to be a sales team. There's still got to be operations and customer support, and there still needs to be, you know, the secretary, and there still needs to be the accountant, and, you know, accounts receivable, accounts payable. I mean, all those departments still need to be there, and now it's just you.
Well, okay, so can you really help all those people get to that understanding? Or once they understand it, they might realize they don't want to do this?
Right, exactly. It's one way or the other, right? Either we come to the understanding. Well, first we come to the understanding of what they truly want. And then we say, okay, so what does that life look like? And for some people, it definitely is being an entrepreneur. Like, they are entrepreneurs. And they maybe didn't know what systems they needed, but now that they do, they're excited about it. That's fun for them, right?
Sure.
And it's like this whole new thing
for them
to learn, and they're excited. Exactly. Exactly. Because now people who are achievement-oriented go crazy if they don't have clear benchmarks. So if they feel like they're just in this overwhelm and they're working so hard, but they can't even tell if they're making progress, then it's like if you just give them a system and say, okay, so these are the things that you need in place and these are the metrics. I start really early on with how do we evaluate the success of what we're doing. So it's like, oh my God, now I can see it. Now I get it. Now I know what I'm trying to do. And now they can pour all of their energy into something where they see results and understand the feedback they're getting. They're in heaven.
Yeah, so that you get them to that point of either understanding that or understanding that, oh, I don't know if I want to do this or not.
Yeah, sometimes sometimes the latter, yeah.
Yeah, and it is what it is, but that's a good process to. Okay, so what are the biggest issues that you're seeing in general?
Well, I would say that.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Number one would be kind of this thing that we're talking about now of just not understanding what was going to be called upon for them. Once we're past that, I would say this jumping around thing, you know, like people, how can I say this? So there are those people when you introduce them to a system of metrics, they love it. They eat it up. They're natural entrepreneurs in the way that they like to be able to chart their own success and experiment and see the results of experiments and adapt from that. Not everyone is like that. There are some people who they do really want to be self-employed for a number of reasons, you know, even understanding what's involved, but they don't really, they can't get themselves to work with metrics and things like that. And so when it comes to, say, let's just take one topic, marketing. There are so many different approaches you could take to marketing, but if you try to do them all at the same time, you're going to get nowhere. You're going to be exhausted and overwhelmed, and you're not going to even be able to tell what's really working. So you really have to create a system and have a feedback loop and test things for an extended period of time, testing just one thing, isolated tests, to get what your ROI, you know, your return on investment for that particular effort is. And when you finish the testing period and you've identified what works best, you want to do that and only that. There's a great book, Traction. Have you heard of that book, Traction?
No, I haven't, but it sounds like it.
Well, it teaches a method very much like that. And what I discover is that those people, even understanding this, those people who are allergic to metrics, they just insist on jumping around. And that, you know, marketing is one thing. It's about building relationships, and relationship building takes time. Consistency is the most important thing for marketing. You could pick randomly, just pick the thing you like doing the most, that you could spend the most hours doing. Don't even necessarily worry about what would give you the best return if you can't stand to figure out what actually is giving you the best return. But at least just then be consistent.
Well, one thing I heard is like building relationships. It's like planting seeds. It's like growing a harvest or being a farmer. You're planting seeds and waiting for your crops to grow. And yeah. So it just takes time. And sometimes
yeah.
you
and
don't
you
get the fruit
around,
for some plants. You don't get yeah. the fruit for a couple of years. It is
what
it
thankfully
is.
Thankfully, marketing doesn't take that long.
Well, yeah.
I'd give up on a marketing approach if it took that long.
Well, marketing, but yes, but with relationships, relationships can surely be that way.
Yeah, it could easily take 3 months before you're seeing, you know, the kind of results that you're looking to see before you can kind of relax and say, okay, this is the way. And, you know, if you're unconfident, if you really are lacking in confidence about your decision in the first place, it's very unlikely you're going to give it the 3 months. Instead, what you're going to do is you're going to do this today, and maybe next week you'll still be doing that, but probably you'll be doing something different, and you'll have like five different kinds of things going on. And you'll and even when something starts working, you won't be able to tell which one, so you'll still have to keep doing all five.
Oh, geez. So basically, you give them a metric saying, okay, we're going to ease their anxiety. Let the process work itself out. It'll take 3 months before we know if this particular thing is working. And but you have to do this, because if you get a bunch of other things going, we won't know if it's working, and it's a big mess. So you just
have it's to a little bit like that. I give them a shorter time frame because what I do tests. So instead of saying, okay, so if I can't get someone to be willing to go through the testing system, like, you know, just because I'm a consultant doesn't mean I'm controlling them. Right?
Yeah, well, exactly.
So I try to get them to do it, but if they just won't do it, I don't get hung up there, and then I switch over to, okay, just pick one thing and do it for the next 3 months. But what I really try to do is more of a 2 week test, or 3 week test. So I try to get them to test, just pick their top three things. And then we do tests on them, and then we, you know, come up with a conversion factor so that we can be comparing apples to apples instead of apples to oranges. And then just see, okay, which effort returned the best in this, you know, test period.
So basically,
and then I say, okay, now go.
So of these three, then that's the one that comes out the best is the one we spent our 3 months on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So what would you say is the biggest change in the industry in general? What's the biggest thing out there right now that you're experiencing?
Well, I think that there's a big influence from just the young people who are entering the world of work right now, and the way that they have been educated and raised is so different than, say, you know, my generation. I'm Generation X, but Generation Y, you know, people born in the 90s or since, yeah. They, you know, they're just really different. They're much more focused on life meaning, and they aren't really that accepting of this idea of this divide between who they are at work and who they are in their life in general. They care more about measuring their success in things other than money. You know, they want money, but they don't really measure their success in those terms. They're really keen on networking. They can kind of organize among themselves very quickly. They're really keen on research and coming up with information and evaluating things for themselves. And you put all these things together, it means different things for entrepreneurs who are trying to sell to these people, and it means something different for bigger companies who are trying to employ these people.
And it's because they were just raised differently too. I mean, they're raised in a networking environment and an information rich environment where they can do their own research. They network all the time. It just creates a different, I mean, they're a different culture.
They have their own culture.
They're just different.
Yeah, they're almost like cyborgs, right? Because like the technology is so built into them. It's just like an extension of their body almost.
Well, they use technologies like we use the telephone, you know what I mean? We grew up with the telephone.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're so far beyond us. But and on top of it, the way that, you know, education has changed over the years, and so they were rewarded in their educational system just for participation. It wasn't about like there's this one winner who gets all the stuff. It's like everybody got awarded who participated, right?
Even someone that did a crappy job. Their framework is different. Yeah, there's good and bad parts of it because there was,
Well, let's focus on the good part.
Well, I have to bring up the reality. I mean, there's good and bad parts of always, rewarding participation, because the people who were not doing a good job were also brought along too. And so there's some issues there, but keep going.
Well, yeah, so, and that's all true. But I think, you know, and what do we do with them? Like, you know, how do we succeed with them? And so the fact that they are keen on participation and that they have those expectations around them making their effort is supposed to be worth something. It says, well, if you're their manager, then how do you successfully manage that person? Well, you need to have a lot of transparency. You need to be able to, for them to see how things are supposed to be adding up to something so that they can self-regulate and they can adjust themselves where they set their own standards for what their participation is supposed to be producing.
Well, how do they react when they don't have the environments that they expect to have?
They leave.
They just, the loyalty is just,
they
just
quit.
Leave. And do they not,
yeah.
They don't have...
And that whole 2 weeks notice idea, I don't think it's quite caught on. they're living in their integrity, it comes before money. You know, if they have to go move into their parents' basement or something like that, or, you know, couch surf or something, they'll do that before they'll put up with a situation that they feel is toxic to the person that they're trying to be. They're very, you know, they've been raised with this idea of you're supposed to be true to who you are. You have your first responsibility is to yourself. Like, this is the psychological training of their generation.
Yeah, find your passion.
Yeah, and that is,
yes.
And if you're not doing that, it's like you're a part of the problem. If you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem. But what are the good things about this, right? So what do we do that works with this? Well, companies like Salesforce.com, for example, have been very successful at recruiting that generation and making the most out of their abilities because they do these things like, I forget exactly what the initiative is called, but this 5% thing, like 5% of the company's profits get donated to nonprofits. Employees are able to give a certain percentage of their work hours towards volunteering, there's a big environment within the company that appreciates people for the volunteering that they do. Generation Y eats this stuff up. They love it.
Well, what do you do as a company?
Lunchrooms that have all kinds of foods in them that are all the time. Anyone can take what they want anytime. Generation Y, oh my God, it's like you care about me. You're nurturing me. You're feeding me. They become like dogs.
Well, what do you do as a company?
I don't know Generation Y people are listening.
Oh, geez. So what do you do as a company when you can't afford that? You're in one of those cycles where you're trying to, you know, very competitive industry. And
okay.
What
yeah.
do you do?
They love that, too. They love that, too, because now you just empower them to help make the company succeed. You put it on transparency. You let them know, okay, this is what we're in. We're in the trenches together. We're going to make this thing happen. We're a team. And you take down the hierarchies because they don't respect those very much to begin with. And you really make it, here we are doing this thing together that's going to make a difference in the world. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, if your company doesn't have any way it can frame what it's doing as a mission to make a difference in people's lives, you're going to have a hard time attracting Generation Y people.
It just is what it is.
You've got to have at least the...
So you have to come up with a way, even if your budget doesn't really, you have to come up with creative ways.
What I just said doesn't take any money, right?
Sure.
Like it's just messaging.
And getting everybody on the same page. Now, what do you do with the Generation X and the baby boomers who are going to fight back? Because that's not their culture.
Well, so it's difficult to say sometimes, like, you know, with companies that are really large, established companies and... So they've got this spectrum of really all these, you know, like you said, three different generations that are each very different, working together. So it's harder for me to prescribe really for them. I think a lot of the times though, it comes down more department by department and team by team. Like a lot of the tech teams, for example, are going to largely have younger people on them. You know, the departmental managers may be a little bit older, but, even then a lot of times they're just in their 30s, right? So they're,
sure.
you know, So, but a lot of the tech people, tech departments are going to be mostly the younger people. So even in a larger company, you may simply have different policies and just cultures, like different subcultures. You know, at a large company, you know, again, I would try not to name names, but take a very conservative major corporation, you know, if they want to have the best technical people, they maybe need to loosen up some of their standards for those teams and not have the same dress code and maybe even have them, you know, in a different part of the building and just or in a different building that's, you know, nearby. I mean, just really try to, you know, balancing that of overall cohesiveness versus giving each team what they most need is a skill for the organizational development people. You know, it's not really my expertise. But I will say that if you are able to create a culture that really works with the best of Generation Y, the future is technology, right? It's going to be more and more a part of our, technology isn't going to be just about people making computers or being, you know, making websites or making apps. It's not going to be just that. It's going to be things that are products. Just about every product that we're using now, other than food products, is going to have some element of technology in it. And so the people who are getting that education and training, for the most part, are very young right now.
And it's basically figuring out ways to incorporate technology into everyday life, because even things that you wouldn't even think would have technology will, like paintings. You know, it might be 3D printed with a circuit board on it, or your building structures might actually have solar panels built into the outside walls and heating structures built into the inside walls. It just, everything is so much more, will be technology based in some way, and people figuring out more and more ways to implement it in the everyday things in the world.
And so competing with your competitors is going to be about having technology that's most up to date, having features and benefits that people care about that make their lives easier, that rely on technology, which means your company needs to be hiring the people who have those skills. And again, they tend to be younger people. So, you know, you don't want them leaving every 6 to 12 months. You don't want that happening. You know, you want them to feel like this is their home away from home, and that they're really committed to the success of this company because it's helping them to achieve their personal objectives for their lives.
Well, and the other thing, hold on, I got to cut this out. Okay, the other thing that I was thinking is that the young people, how about, you know, like the people going into the financial companies, because finance is really conservative. And let's face it, finance is kind of taken over, which maybe hopefully it'll be taken back, because I'm not a big fan of kind of where that industry's at. But it's very conservative. So what is their challenge to deal with, you know, some of the young people going into that? Because if you're not dressed a certain way and if you don't hold yourself a certain way, you're not going to be respected in finance. So there might be a challenge.
Yeah, I think it's a little different there, though. So I'm talking about, you know, Generation Y in general, right? But there are always, you know, exceptions. And when we're talking about so many people.
Oh, exactly.
Even, you know, 10% is a lot of people, right? So there's that 10% who are still completely driven by money, and those are the ones who go into finance.
And those people the Generation Y need to change. They are the ones that are going to hit the culture shock and are going to need to change and do, you know, and I guess it comes both ways. Finance isn't always going to be cold and whatever it is. But
well, I think it is what it is, but I think that regardless of what's going on in general in a generation, there are always those people who are throwbacks to some other generation or ahead to some, you know, emerging generation. You know, I always feel like I've been a Generation Y-er even though I was born in Generation X.
Sure.
So that's always going to be the case. So there's always going to be enough people to go work on Wall Street who want nothing more than to make more money than anybody else as young as possible.
Yeah, they want to be the next 30-year-old billionaire.
Yeah, and
but
they want to
those
do it,
two.
You know,
we need
that
those
way
two.
Instead of.
So
go ahead.
What I know you have some ideas for, or you have some promotional products that you're going to offer to some of our listeners. What have you come up with?
Well, so this was sort of, I don't know if you want to cut this out later, because I thought I was actually going to throw it back to you for what you wanted.
Do you just want to close out the show and then we can, because I figured that if we did this, then people would know to come to the radio page and look at it or go to your website and look at it. But
well, let's pick one now and I can say it though, but I don't know which one. Like, it could be any one of those three things. Maybe I should talk more about people submitting the assessment, and I don't know. I mean, which do you think, or for the passive income discount?
I like the passive income, but I mean, I don't know. Just because I like it doesn't mean everybody will. I think that's a pretty unique deal that you got going on.
Okay, well, why don't we do that? I'll do the discount on that program for the listeners of the show.
Okay, so let me reintroduce that. Okay.
Okay.
So we've been talking about you are going to do a promotion for some of the listeners of the show. What have you come up with?
So I decided that since, you know, passive income seems to be the thing that most people are having a strong interest in right now, I'd love to offer your listeners a special where they basically can get the program at a discount. So normally where it would be, you know, X amount of money and then this percentage of revenue, or if you want to pay for it outright, it would be, you know, this amount of money. It'll be a little less and a lower percentage if you decide to do it that plan. So I think on the page where you see this this program,
the radio page,
some links there.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you just follow the link, it'll take you to the special discount page, and you can kind of see the special offer just for your listeners, Sarah.
Okay. Well, awesome. Passive income is something I think people should be looking into. It's I'm pretty interested in it. I think everybody should be interested. Who doesn't want to make money while they're sleeping, right? So
yeah.
that's a good
it's
idea.
It's so much fun.
Yeah,
it's a really fun thing. Like you wake up and you just like turn on the computer and you check your email. It's like, oh, that was nice.
Exactly.
Or you come out of a day of meetings and you've been in meetings all day, and then you just like go check your email. It's like, oh, while I was in all those meetings, I made you know all this money. So it's just kind of nice.
Yeah. So okay. Well, good. Well, I'll have them. We'll have your information up on the radio page, and they can get more information there. And I want to thank you so much for coming to the show today.
Yeah, you're very welcome. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Okay, have a great day. I want to thank Indigo Dutton for joining us today on the program. She's a remarkable woman. She has overcome a pretty hard life to become the success that she is today. And if you want to learn more about her background, you should read a couple of the books that she has written. And also, if you want to learn about creating a passive income or want some advice and tips on coaching and building your business, feel free to contact her. All of her information is on the radio page. She also will have a special going for anybody that contacts her from the radio show. So for now, have a wonderful day.